My next guest is on the line. He is Chef Yehuda Jacobs. He is an Israeli culinary expert and a Jewish cuisine specialist. And I believe there's a couple of issues with the line. We'll get to him in a minute. But let me just tell you where we're going to be going with that conversation. I'm going to dive right into the rich flavors and the stories of Jewish cuisine with Chef Yehuda Jacobs. Apparently, he's from a traditional family and will offer modern twists to old and traditional recipes. So, Chef Yehuda Jacobs, thank you for being with me on Chai FM this afternoon. I always love talking about food, that is for sure.
From last time, my friend, and I also remember we don't talk about herring this week.
How did you know about that?
We talked about it the last time I was on the show.
Because we did speak about herring. This week as well. Oh my goodness me. No. I went on a bit of a what's the word I want? I went up on a bit of rampage against herrings this week. That's for sure. It clearly is an issue with me, this issue of herring. Anyway, no more herrings today. I want to speak to you about a dish that you reckon tells your story as a chef.
A dish that basically would define me as a chef. Wow. I don't think I've ever gotten quite that question before.
Are you going traditional? Are you sticking to Jewish food? Are you going wide?
So it has to be Jewish food because that's what I grew up on. Funny enough, though, because I come from an American background, my grandparents were actually born in America. I mean, I'm third generation American.
Okay.
I'm not my grandparents were born in America, so they are when they were growing up, so the American culture also affected them as well as the Jewish background. So one of the things that it wouldn't define me as a chef, but brings a lot of memories like that I used to do with my grandmother was making a dish called pierogies.
I think we know that. Those are the things you put in soup, aren't they?
So no, so a pierogi is a Eastern European dish where it's basically a dough filled with potatoes, and
Yes.
then I'll go to the story of the potatoes. Filled with potatoes and caramelized onions, it's basically boiled and then fried with butter and onions, and it's just utterly delicious and traditionally eaten on the holiday of Shavuot in a lot of Jewish homes, and in general in Russian and Eastern European homes, it's eaten every single day. But my family specifically, it was getting together because she used to make that with her father, or she remembers making it in her father's restaurant in the Lower East Side when he came from Europe and he opened up a restaurant, and it just brought back a lot of memories. And it was really like one of the first times where I was actually like, working with dough, and she was telling the stories, and it really, there was a lot behind it to really push me to really like learn more about like first of all learn more about food, but also technique and flavors. And it's very simple. It's a very simple dish of pierogi, but just doing it with my grandmother and the tradition behind it
I
and the story
totally
behind it
understand. I
really
totally
moved me.
understand. And I mean, I'm just listening to you talk about it. It probably you couldn't get a cheaper food than the food that you have just described right now. And isn't that what this is all about in terms of how they took what was available and then turned it into something delicious and becomes part of a culture?
100%. That's what brisket is all about. People talk about Jewish brisket, for example, right?
Yeah.
Today there's 100 different variations of how to do the brisket, but at the end of the day, it's a brisket that was used to be, and I say used to be, a very, very cheap cut that and the people that couldn't afford meat, that's what they would buy. They would use it for ground beef and they would cook it for a very, very long time. And that's what the Jews were able to afford when they moved to America. So when they call it a Jewish brisket, it's basically the only reason it's called a Jewish brisket is because that was the only cut of meat that they were able to afford. And and the tomato sauce and the vegetables and that sugary, sweet Ashkenazi tomato sauce. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like,
Of course I do. Of course I do. But I'm also fascinated by the fact that, I mean, basically, you and I and the Jews of South Africa, we're from the same stock. We're all Eastern European. We have an ancestor who, whether they were in Poland or Ukraine or Russia, that's pretty much where we all came from, us more Lithuanian. But there's certain foods that just didn't make the journey down south to Africa. So you go to New York, you see food like a knish. I didn't even know what a knish was. It's just something that didn't make it to Africa. We eat babka and teglach in South Africa, and it turns out that you guys, those who cross the Atlantic instead of going down it, don't really do teglach, and you just don't. It's not your
no.
thing, and I find that
Yes to
really
babka.
interesting.
Oh, they
Yes
love
to
babka.
babka.
Oh, big babka. There's this Instagrammer who became famous in the Jewish world because of babka. He
You've got
calls
to be
himself the
kidding me.
Babka King. Look it up. It's a guy. He calls himself the Babka King. He's an African American. Has nothing to do with Judaism. I think he's a Christian. He just came to Israel on a Hasbara tour. And all because of a babka post of his that went viral.
Goodness gracious me, what the world only turns out. It's fascinating. Let's get back to
Babka is
yours.
viral. It's crazy.
You've got to be kidding me. I mean,
I'm
it's
not.
dough with a bit of cinnamon in and sometimes sugar. That's about it. There's
Or
nothing
chocolate.
forever, but I think you've just committed a food crime. I think you've just committed a food crime. I don't think that's okay to put chocolate in babka, but maybe I'm wrong. Cinnamon, yes. Babka, chocolate, no. Your food story, was there a
Yes.
moment that made you think, okay, I'm hooked. I'm in love with this. This is what I'm going to do with my life. Or was it?
So I was a hefty kid who loved food, and I loved to cook. My mother taught me how to cook, and my grandmother, she really gave me the passion how to cook. And then what just happened to be, it's just like I slid into it with my brother and my sister when we started cooking like for Shabbat, and suddenly we found ourselves cooking like different things and looking up recipes. And then probably at the age of 15, like I didn't imagine I was going to be a professional chef. I did see myself all the time just finding myself around food. Meaning, I thought I might be an architect. I love art. I thought maybe I would go into like if this was at the beginning of the high tech movement. I said maybe I should go into high tech. I didn't think I was going to go into food, but it just everywhere I went, food was just I was there. You know what I mean? Like if I was in high school, suddenly I find myself washing dishes in the high school or I'm barbecuing for friends. I worked at a butcher shop for 3 years when I was 18. And again, at home cooking, for my family so my parents could work. And it just evolved from there, And then after I got married, I decided I'm going to go to chef school.
Let's talk about Israeli cuisine. It seems to be having a moment. I'm not sure what the war in Gaza is going to do to that moment, but it was having a moment. What do you think is the appeal about Israeli cuisine that they're conquering Europe?
So, if I may, there really isn't an Israeli cuisine. Now, I'm not trying to be, a self-hating Jew or anything like that, but I call it more of like a kibbutz galuyot, as they say in Hebrew. It's basically because we have so many Jews from diaspora that moved to Israel and brought their dishes to Israel. It's basically it's gone out, come back, and now it's going out again. The next generation is basically like taking the things that they learned at home and they're bringing like shakshuka. Who could have imagined that shakshuka is going to be one of the most popular dishes in cafes all across the world today? Shakshuka has been around for hundreds of years. The whole concept of eggs and tomato sauce from China to Portugal to South America to North Africa, it's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. But what made it so popular is A, the internet, and B, just the concept of such a elaborate quote unquote breakfast dish and how simple it is and how delicious it is. And it's basically taken over the world. If you want to talk about an Israeli dish, you could talk about sabich, which is actually invented in Israel. It's a real dish that was invented here, that the vegetarian sandwich with the deep fried eggplant and potatoes and hard boiled eggs and the harissa paste and the salad and the tahina and the pickles, all in a pita, all invented here.
So it's really interesting because I'm listening to you talk, and everything you've mentioned is all Mizrahi or Sephardi food.
Correct.
Ashkenazi food doesn't seem to be having a moment, but then again, I can't see lakshin or cholent being re-exported back to Europe or the Americas.
So can I tell you, I'll tell you a short story. When I was in, I think it was Croatia on a job, and we cooked the cholent for Shabbat for our guests, you know, and, yeah. and we had to serve also the yacht crew lunch. And they're sitting down and they're eating the cholent and they're just pounding it. Like my guests ate a little bit, they finished the pot. And they go, "What in the world is this?" And I say, it's cholent. And then they go, "What is this?" Because they have the concept of a dish with like a cassoulet almost of Croatia, which is just beans and smoked sausage and potatoes, but not a cholent. And they're like, "What's in there?" And I said, "Everything but the kitchen sink." And they started laughing.
But they got it.
But they understood it. It just doesn't taste to them like they would traditionally eat it, you know? But cholent, if you bring it out there, if you offer it to someone and tell the story about basically it's the kitchen sink because we can't cook on Shabbat, they taste it, they love it, and then suddenly they had a Jewish experience that they never experienced before.
Tomorrow Shabbat. What's the go-to Shabbat recipe that never fails to impress?
Oh, chraime, 100% chraime.
You're going to have to translate that because you're assuming a lot there. I don't think there are many South Africans who have a clue what chraime is.
Okay.
Because I love it. But
so chraime, it basically is a North African spicy fish dish that's served traditionally on Shabbat in many, many, many households, Ashkenazi, Sephardi today. But it came from mainly North Africa. And it's where they take a cheaper cut of fish. And I'm putting a dagesh. I'm putting like a point on saying an emphasis on the cheaper cut because fish, as we know, could go to be very, very expensive. But yeah. Talking about, for example, either Nile perch or even ground fish turned into fish balls. And it's cooked in a very savory, spicy tomato sauce. And it's just, it's got a sweetness from the tomatoes, savory from the fish and umami from that, from all of that, you know, the onions and the tomatoes. And it's just, you smear that on with some challah and boom, you have the perfect Friday night appetizer or main course in many, many houses. And very important, don't forget the chickpeas. Very
you left
important.
Out the garlic, and that's pretty astounding to me.
I thought that was, a given.
There's heads and heads of garlic in the stuff, and I can't imagine.
It's just Jews love garlic. I just thought it was a given. You know, I didn't have to say garlic because tomatoes and garlic is like, you know, it's two peas in a pod. It always goes together. But yes. But in my opinion, it's not only the garlic, it's the hot peppers and the chickpeas because the chickpeas give it the texture and even more savoriness and even more protein to the dish as well. So it's even healthier than just eating just fish and spicy tomato sauce. Even like to do sliced peppers. I like to do spicy peppers and bell peppers, like red bell peppers to add even more sweetness and more texture. And it's just a delicious, delicious dish.
I think one has to try it to understand just how delicious it is. The innovation from you today for me was eating it with kitka. I mean, I can taste that in my mind, and that's a combination made in heaven. I totally get what you're saying. Wildest or funniest thing that's ever happened in your kitchen?
Oh, where do I start? Can I tell you a story about me, if that's okay?
Yeah, I'd love you to.
So when I was in the army, back when I was a young lad, they put you on kitchen duty. It's part of your duties as a soldier.
Yeah.
And in the army kitchens, they cook in vats. They don't cook in pots. They cook in massive, massive vats because they're serving hundreds and thousands of soldiers a day. So where we finished cooking the meal, and now we got to clean out these vats. Now all these vats are, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of liters of water. And we're cleaning them out. We're scrubbing them. And I'm in there and I'm getting in there, you know, elbow deep and head in there. And a friend of mine decided, you know, maybe Yehuda should take a swim.
Oh, no.
And he kicked my feet out from under me and I slid right into that pot head first
into the vat.
And then my friend twisted the knob, and then it was vertical again, and I couldn't get out.
Good, get out. Yeah, no, I could see that in my mind's eye. All right, well, that's thanks for sharing that. I didn't expect that. I thought you'd maybe burnt something for some impressive guests. I didn't expect you to land up in the pot, but hey,
I've
I
got
don't think
hundreds
you.
of stories, my friend. I've got hundreds of stories.
Well, we'll just talk again and you'll reveal them. That's what you'll do. This is a real tough one. Your guests for dinner are the Ashkenazi chief rabbi, the Sephardi chief rabbi, and your grandmother. What are you
Ooh.
cooking?
Oh, I'm cooking a fusion. I'm cooking a fusion of Ashkenazi and Sephardi food. For example, have you ever
Okay.
heard of the dish called mafroum?
Somewhere in the back of my mind, what is mafroum?
Okay, so mafroum is a North African dish, very popular in Tripoli, Morocco, where they take ground beef and they put it inside of a potato and serve it on a tomato sauce, in a tomato sauce. And sometimes they fry the potatoes to hold it together, and then they slowly, slowly cook it in a tomato sauce on for about 45 minutes to an hour, and they serve it like on couscous. So what I would do is take a dish like that and turn it sort of like Ashkified a little bit, maybe make the sauce a little sweeter, maybe serve it on farfel instead of couscous.
Interesting.
And then do like a crossover of like, oh, it's like an Ashkenazi meatball, but it's cooked in a Sephardi way. You know what I mean? Because you've got the potato and you've got the meat
Totally.
And you've got the sweet. And then instead of serving it on a bed of couscous with the vegetables, you serve it on something like farfalle or even with a piece of kugel, because Sephardim love kugel, by the way.
Yeah, I don't believe you, but okay. I just can't see that. I just can't see that happening. The one ingredient that you can't live without?
Cumin.
You've been in the Middle East for way too long. I wasn't expecting that. I thought you were going to go garlic. Cumin, that's you've Mizrachified. There's no question about that. And then, let's talk about this new craze all over the world about TikTok chefs and viral food hacks. Everybody's cooking something, doing something. Do you think this is actually promoting or hurting your craft?
I think it's doing a little bit of both. For example, I don't have a TikTok. I'm on Instagram. I stay away from TikTok because that's already, you know, a personal choice and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it really brought awareness to people in the kitchen that it's okay to cook. That, you know, it's not scary. It's not terrifying. A lot of these recipes are not successful. They're not great. They're not
Interesting.
Easy to replicate at home. But I do like the idea that it gets someone out of their comfort zone and say, okay, we're going to go now to the supermarket and we're going to buy something and we're going to make something that we've never tried before. You know, whether it's someone decides to make their own homemade ramen, for example, or even a chicken soup for Shabbat. A lot of people are afraid to make chicken soup, but again, it's a very, very easy dish, but some people are afraid of using raw chicken because, you know, they saw the videos about salmonella or whatever. I mean, obviously, if you cook in a clean environment, it's okay. And you just throw the beautiful thing about, for example, our Friday night chicken soup as Jewish people is you literally throw it into a pot, you turn it on, you add some salt and pepper and some fresh herbs, and you have a beautiful Friday night appetizer of chicken soup. But some people are afraid to even do that. So I think the whole world of social media is a real mix. It brings a lot of awareness to what we do. As a professional chef, I don't know a lot of professional chefs that do a lot of Instagram and TikToks. Like some do, but a lot of us don't have time to do it because we're always working, you know. The influencers, on the other hand, again, it's a mix. Some of them are a lot of positivity, but I'm finding a lot of times that, you know, like for people that go out to restaurants and stuff like that, that you go to the restaurant and you're like, meh. You know, like 50 TikTokers recommend this restaurant. Then you go to the restaurant, you're like, wasn't that good? Or the recipes. But again, they're bringing awareness for people to go out, especially here in Israel, where the past 2 years have been such a topsy-turvy time. You know, it's really encouraging for people to go out to cook or people to go out to eat. And again, it brings a lot of spotlight on our business. And I think it's
interesting.
Very mixed, but I think it's more mixed than towards the positive than the negative.
Yehuda Jacobs, we're going to leave it there this afternoon. Thanks for a delicious conversation. I really enjoyed every moment, and we'll check in with you again soon, I have no doubt.